Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here this week. We'll have to, you know, because of COVID, I think with Randy's message, I'm going to say traveling the world literally. Now we are all traveling via Zoom. And I know Skype's been around for ages, but so we're all actually, many of us, I'm even hearing people are, you know, doing family get-togethers, parties, different things via Zoom and other applications. And we've been doing a lot of it. So it's cool. It's really great. So, and that's what I love about doing this virtual podcast that I've been doing for over 9 years. I guess it's time for us to really get out and monetize, which is what so many people are doing with everything. And I've always loved to keep this part of it organic. So I hope you're doing well wherever you are. And a lot of our agents and brokers listen to this in the membership at some point because we always keep the archives going. And so today we're going to actually do a little bit of training, not on purpose, but training for the general public too. And you always know other people as well. And then it's good for agents too and brokers because we have been in a seller's market for quite some time. Who would have ever known that COVID would be as hard as it's been, that we would even have COVID? I mean, who would know that all of this would happen? And I haven't seen as much anxiety as I'm witnessing all over, everywhere, because I get to deal in a lot of different markets with a lot of different people. And people that even usually didn't get anxious are getting anxious. And I think a lot of that's because of the unknown and things that are out of our control. It's just a lot of people are, so much information's thrown at us, decisions to make, and not all of these decisions are in our control. And so today we're just going to dig in for a little bit. If you would like to call in, the number is 347-945-5428. I've also got some questions that people have emailed in from before about this particular situation. We get a lot of this going on. We also teach it, do it, live it. If you're having a hard time buying a home in this market and you're getting beat out, you want to listen to this today. And we'll give you some extra tips at the end as well. And you can also email us at radio@realtyuniversal and ask for the tips on the show that was about buying a home in this market and getting beat out. So it's definitely, this is where I'm praying and giving sympathy to everybody out there that's gone through. We're all going through. So many people have lost so many loved ones. It's been really tragic not being able to see them with the COVID. And now we're in the stage with the vaccinations, and many don't know whether to get one or not get it. So there's just so many question marks out there. And decisions to be made. So how has the housing market been so robust with all this going on and with COVID? And it's all over the country. It's not in just any one specific area that it's been such a seller's market. Prices have gone up. Home sales, brand new home sales went down a little bit in January, February, wintertime in certain areas, the automatic would, but January, February, even in warm areas, because of the cost of materials went up a lot. So you're seeing differences. You can kind of look at the markets and see some of the changes. The interest rates being lowered have definitely spurred the market and refinancing, home buying. I mean, we were in the twos, now we're in the threes, and that's really, really low. So many people that couldn't afford a home, say a $500,000 or $600,000 house, could versus before maybe they qualified for about a $300,000 house. So it's a big, big disparity in what's going on. And but this is life, and we're supposed to live in the present, and we're not supposed to worry so much about I wish I could have, should have, and we're not supposed to worry so much about the future, although we need to plan. And so I just wanted to go over today some things that really help if you're the buyer trying to get beat, you know, buy a house. I know in Honolulu we've seen prices go through the roof, and the escalation clauses, which is when somebody's, you're going in to buy a property, say the property's listed for $450,000, and you know, there's 10 offers, you may want to offer an escalation clause. You may end up going to $475,000, $500,000. We're seeing ridiculous numbers in Hawaii that are, I mean, people are going $100,000, $200,000 plus over things. And on the mainland, it depends on where you are. It really depends on where you are everywhere. But we're seeing all over the country, you're seeing people bidding up over the list price. And it's hard for a buyer because if you're getting a loan, the property still has to appraise. So if there's buyers out there that have a lot of cash, or even if they're getting a loan and they're willing to pay the difference between the loan, the sales price, and what they must appraise for, then if you don't have it, you're getting beat out. So we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of skepticism. Where is the market going to go? You know, it's one thing I can say is it's always better to get in and do something. You know, sitting on the sidelines is not always a good thing. You know, I don't know your specific individual situation. So for some people right now, sitting on the sidelines is a good thing. But if you know that you want to buy, or you know you want to get into the deal, and if you know, you know you want to sell, it's really good to go ahead and do your homework, get in touch with an agent or broker, get the information. There's a lot of free information online right now that you can get a lot of information. But it really is important to touch base with a professional to find out what's going on in your local market, if you're not, you know, and getting as many facts as you can, making sure you're covered with your contracts and anything legal as well. So, but it's important to do. Don't just wait. Don't wait, because so many of us that get fear is not a good way to do it. So it's important to know what you really want, plan, and go after it. And move forward, because the fear is going to come up. I've noticed with a lot of first-time home buyers, and people, you know, it could be at any age, a lot of younger people buying first time. We have so many reality shows that us old-timers kid all the time and say, you know, oh my gosh, they're not real shows. They're not the real reality. And then people want everything perfect, and you can actually get a much better deal if you buy a property and you're concerned about location, schools, if you need to be concerned about schools, look at market values, how much has it gone up before, you know, what's the history of the area. That's really important, because if you walk into a house and it's exactly the location you want, the layout's exactly what you want, but the rooms are printed, you know, purple, and the carpet is from the 70s, or say the carpet's orange and yellow and green, and all this funky stuff, but the layout is exactly what you want. The location is what you want. Don't turn away from it. Don't completely turn away from it, because you may be able to get such a good deal price-wise and then rip the carpet out, paint the walls, do things to it, and have that beautiful home that you want and saved a lot of money on. And I cannot press this point enough, because location, location, location is the name of the game. But the reason I want to impress this point today is so many people want it perfect. They want a model home, which is great to buy a model home and then have a house built and pick everything out that you want. But if you're going to save a lot of money doing it another way and looking at these other homes that may not be specifically your style, your taste, you know, or maybe your dining room furniture doesn't fit, that's really not a good reason to not buy something if everything else works. So it is good to get a checklist, make a checklist, and really, really zone in on what you like. So if you're buying with your partner, husband, wife, you know, you're buying, you've got a family and children, of course, different factors are going to take higher priorities depending on what you need. So it's important to make that checklist and get your family to make a checklist and whoever else is buying the property with you. If it's an investment property, that's a whole nother ball game, except you still want to make sure that those numbers are going to work and you can cover things. We've seen with all the moratoriums going on, there has been issues with rentals that we didn't have before as much. You know, you've always, because your rental can be paid off in so many years and be an excellent investment, and right now you have to weigh the pros and the cons of that because we have a lot of moratoriums going on, and if somebody doesn't pay, can you afford to keep the house? But it's not, I wouldn't let the fear base get into everything. I would first decide, what do you want to do? So today, because our time is limited, we're just going to focus on if you're buying the house for yourself, your family, you, whether you're single, married, living with somebody, you know, depending on how many people you're taking care of, your elderly parents, if you need an in-law apartment, we're just going to focus on purchase, not for so much investment, although you have to look at your investment for the future, and purchase for something that you want for you. And if you're in a scenario where you're getting beat out and people are bidding up, a couple things we're going to go through and just kind of go through the list for you to think about. Now, and also remember, this is for you and your family or whoever you're buying it for, so don't take everybody else's opinion into play, including mine. I'm just giving you the expert advice of what I've seen over the years and what can work so that you can get yourself into what you want to get into. Somebody was doing we do a lot of assessment tests for people that work with us and agents, brokers. We do it in training. I take them myself, you know, because it's really good. The more you know yourself and the more you know what you want and do not want. And it's easy to know, right? It's easy to know, but it's nice to take some of these tests and narrow it down. What I find interesting when we're really going to look at what we really want and do not want, it's really good, personally, to make a wish list. A lot of times, people think our assets are only what assets, what money we have in the bank, what assets we have in our property, you know, equity in our properties, what money in the stock market, other investments. And we tend to forget about our knowledge and our investments and what we know, which is a lot more, worth a lot more, many, many times, if you're going to equate it to money. Your businesses, there's so many factors involved. So look at the whole picture and start to make your wish list. So, yes, you do need to be qualified if you're getting a loan and you're not paying cash, but look at your wish list as to what you like. What do you want your home to be like? And just imagine and make your list. Even if you say, okay, I can only qualify right now for a $250,000 house and everything I love is $400,000, maybe you could look at condos or townhomes or, you know, just different ways to do this, or even another location. There's a lot of situations going on now where people are getting up and moving where they've always wanted to live because they can work virtually right now. So I'm running through this, and then we're going to go through slower and go one by one and go over this. So it's important to do that because, and you never know. You know, you can always, if you buying the house is definitely depending on where you're going to live, like with a job and work, you know, put out those resumes, or if you have your own company, look at how you can run your businesses virtually and still live where you want to live. So nothing, it's never, ever too late to change your mind. So if you've been going down one path for a long time and you know that path isn't the right path, change it. Why am I talking about this part of it before I'm talking about how do we stop from being beat out if we're trying to buy a home in this market and we're talking about a seller's market and we keep losing the house? You know, I think it's important because sometimes what we want isn't what we totally want until we start working through it and defining it. Lots of times, you hear people so many times, they finally become wealthy. They've been working on it for years, and then they get there and go, is this all it is? Oh, wow. No, I'm not. I think money's great because we need money. We need money to pay for things. It's still our, you know, we need money for lots of things. So I'm definitely for money. But I'm just saying, lots of times we get somewhere in our life and we go, oh, this is different than what I thought it was supposed to be. So that's why I think it's really good to make your list, make your wish list, talk to your kids and say, what would you like in a home? What are you looking forward to? Talk to your partner, husband, spouse, and really narrow this down as to what you like. Because it's too easy to just go, okay, let's go buy over here. This is what we want and this is going to do. So get out your pen and paper if you're not driving and make your wish list, just a wish list of what you would really like to have in your home. And it can be your dream home now. You don't have to wait for your dream home. Start and see what that is. And make that list, and we will be right back.
We're excited to be able to continue to bring to the world stage a company as dedicated to universal excellence as Realty Universal, Inc. On the surface, our company has been initiating a revolution in the real estate world since 1996. We started offering our menu programs when it was not the standard way of doing business. Now it is so much more understood and commonplace, although we are still ahead of the rest due to experience within the systems. In today's economy, our menu programs make it possible for buyers and sellers to still have a win-win situation. The best situation in life is when everyone wins. Everyone must give in to assist in the outcome, and what happens is very positive experience. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe that sellers and buyers should have choices. As obvious as this seems, traditional real estate has never been structured in such a way as to allow the multitude of choices sellers and buyers truly deserve. After years of perfecting and receiving feedback on our programs, we have developed real estate menu systems that are used by buyers, sellers, and agents and brokers who are part of our Realty Universal network, which is growing by leaps and bounds.
A common trait heroes often share is the courage to challenge society's misperceptions. Eric Weinmayer challenged naysayers when he attempted what was said to be impossible, climb Mount Everest, blind.
Well, you know, at first when you're blind and you think about Everest, you know, you think, well, maybe I'm just crazy. I want to think this through in a rational way. Maybe there are things that I won't be able to overcome.
When Eric Weinmayer first began to consider the possibility of climbing the world's tallest mountain, he knew he had to carefully consider any overwhelming obstacles.
I'd heard, for instance, like the snow conditions on Everest were such that they're so hard up high that you couldn't stop yourself if you fell. Meaning you couldn't arrest yourself, you couldn't throw yourself down on your ice axe and stop yourself. I'd heard that in the death zone above 26,000 feet, you can barely think. And I know as a blind person, I'm always thinking when I'm climbing. I'm thinking about the next step and about the person in front of me. And so I think so much that I thought, well, I can't think and I can't see. I mean, that's a huge, overwhelming combination.
Eric has spent his entire life working through obstacles.
I was born legally blind, so I couldn't see very well even when I was born. It was a rare eye disease called retinaschisis. It unraveled my retinas, and so I was only left with peripheral vision, so I could only see out of the sides of my eyes. And I went blind finally for real when I was 13 years old, just before my freshman year in high school.
Although he'd been told he'd eventually go completely blind, the darkness was a shock. Eric felt himself being crushed with fear and uncertainty.
I wasn't afraid to go blind and see blackness. You know, what I was afraid of was that I'd be, you know, swept to the sidelines and forgotten that my life would be meaningless.
But Eric was blessed with parents who encouraged him to live as fully a life as possible. As Eric's eyesight faded, his dad created ways for Eric to continue playing the sports he loved for as long as he had any vision. When Eric encountered resistance at school to participate in activities, his mother stood up for his right to be allowed to try. Their support fueled a determination in Eric to not be lost in the darkness.
Well, I think what pulled me out was sort of a common human trait, which is optimism. Even though you feel like there's a brick wall in front of you and you don't see options, you still have this glimmer of hope. You know, we always have hope. And so I just always stayed optimistic, even though I was frustrated about how I would do the things that I wanted to do, to not kind of try to see it as some kind of terrible disease that was ravaging my system, but instead to accept it and to, in a way, I guess, turn into the storm and to face the facts of what had happened to me, accept them, and in a way, I guess, become a pragmatist, you know, kind of figure out exactly what I needed to do to climb my way out. And so I started learning how to use a cane, and I started learning how to use Braille to read with my fingers and to use computers with voice synthesizers, and all those skills became the foundation for me thinking about my life in terms of, you know, amazing possibilities.
Two sports in which Eric was able to channel his drive were wrestling and rock climbing.
I was 16 when I started rock climbing. And, you know, wrestling was really fun and competitive. But rock climbing to me was so special because, you know, you could feel the texture of the rocks under your hands, and you could feel the patterns of hot and cold as the sun touched the rock, and you had the open space in front of you and the sun in your face, and it was, I was completely problem solving my way up the rock face using my hands and my feet, you know, using my balance and strength to kind of figure out that puzzle that's embedded in the rock. And for me, it was almost like a rebirth. It was so exhilarating.
At 16, Eric was successfully working through the challenges of being blind when tragedy struck.
And I was kind of just working my way back, kind of getting, you know, finding my footing as a blind person. And I was at wrestling camp, and my dad showed up early, and he told me that my mom had been killed in a car accident. So, you know, in a way, going blind was tough, but, you know, losing somebody like my mom was, I don't know, 1,000 times harder than going blind. It made going blind seem easy. But, and death is one of those things you just, you know, how do you deal with it, you know? So what you do, I think I've tried to do is to push forward as a living person and to try to live as actively and as, you know, give as much impact on the world as I can and, you know, reach my potential as a person. And I think that's the best you can do, and that's the best honor you can give to those who have passed away.
Eric continued to live his life as fully as possible. After high school, he attended college, graduating with a degree in education, which led him to a teaching position in Phoenix, Arizona. Here, he found what he described as a big jumble of rocks, an ideal environment for an emerging rock climber.
And so I was just a rock climber. Yeah, I started rock climbing just as a tourist, you know, just on the weekends with friends. It was a friend of mine named Sam, who we were about 100 feet up on this rock face in the desert, and he got really excited about climbing with me, you know, climbing with a blind guy. He thought that was a real fun challenge. And he said, "Eric, we should try something bigger." And I said, "Like what? Like a 200-foot rock face?" And he said, "No, how about Mount McKinley?" And, you know, I was thinking, well, that is a big jump. You know, that's a 20,300-foot snowy peak in Alaska, one of the most dangerous peaks in America. But I got swept away by Sam's enthusiasm. And anyway, we went and prepared really hard. You know, we went out and tried Mount Rainier, we failed. We went out, we tried Long's Peak in the winter and failed. But every peak we failed on, we got closer to really that bond as a team and to understanding the systems that we would need to be safe and to be a good team on McKinley. I summited McKinley. It was my first of the 7 summits. It turned out to be Helen Keller's birthday when we reached the summit.
As Eric continued to reach the top of numerous mountains, he received more and more attention. He wrote books, was invited to share his adventures as a motivational speaker, and moved from being a weekend climber to climbing full-time around the world. One of his most memorable moments on a mountain was when he married his wife, Ellen, on a sheer plateau at 13,000 feet on Mount Kilimanjaro. Eric felt he was on the right track with his life. However, as for every serious climber, the question of whether or not he could summit the highest peak on Earth nagged at him. It was not an easy decision.
Probably half the people said, "Wow, that's really cool. I'm rooting for him." The other half said, "You know, he's going to ruin Everest. He's going to kill himself. He's a liability. He has no business up there." You know, all these big Himalayan climbers, lots of negativity. And you know, at first you're thinking, "Why do these guys know that I don't?" And I couldn't deny the fact that they were experts. I mean, they were experts on climbing, and and they were experts on Everest, you know, they didn't know anything about me. So I figured they were just judging me on the basis of one thing, and that was the fact that I was blind.
His wife, Ellen, did know Eric, and she believed in what he could do. She told him to live in the moment, to experience the mountain to its fullest without any regrets. With Ellen's and his family's support, and with the support of other sighted climbers who shared his vision, Eric decided to dedicate himself to preparing for this ultimate climb. Eric worked with a team of seasoned climbers, friends with whom he could trust his life. Together, they trained hard, developing techniques to help Eric navigate Everest. They meticulously worked to prepare for every conceivable challenge. Yet despite their preparations, once the team arrived on Everest, they were faced with challenges that regularly defeat the most able-sighted climbers. For Eric, these challenges were almost overwhelming.
The most difficult part, I'd say, was the Khumbu Icefall. It was right out of base camp. It's about 2,500 vertical feet of jumbled up boulders, you know, the size of baseballs to skyscrapers, all just piled on top of each other chaotically. They're exploding and tumbling down the mountain like a river of ice. It moves 3 feet a day, and you don't want to be in it when it's collapsing and tumbling. You know, for me, I look for patterns. You know, I love patterns. You know, I'm kicking up a snow face or an ice face. I'm swinging my tool in a rhythmic way. It's about balance and endurance. It's not about eyes. But the ice fall was all about eyes. I mean, you're jumping from boulder to boulder of ice. They're rolling and shifting under your feet. There's thousands of foot drop-offs. There's crevasses you're jumping over. I was overwhelmed at first. It took me 13 hours to cross it. I mean, I was thinking maybe I bit off way too much here. You know, you get all those little voices in your mind that say, you know, you're way out of your league. What are you doing here? But over time, you know, you cross through the icefall 10 times. You don't just cross through it once because you're acclimatizing and you're setting up your higher camp. So, you know, I got through it my third or fourth time. I started figuring out these little systems that I could use to get through. And I worked my time down from 13 hours and the last time up to less than five. And my team stuck with me as I cut time off each and every time. They're a good team.
It took the team weeks to reach the final camp from which they would attempt the summit. Exhausted and struggling from the effects of oxygen deprivation due to the extreme altitude, Eric and his team began their final ascent.
We left at 9 o'clock at night. We pushed through the night. We pushed through a big storm, a big lightning storm that was exploding around us at 27,500 feet that stalled us out for about an hour. But by 4 in the morning, the storm had passed. I felt the sun on my face. By 8 in the morning, we made it to 28,700 feet, just 200 feet below the summit. That's called the South Summit. And at that point, you cross over the Knife Edge Ridge. It's about 3 feet wide. There's a 12,000-foot drop on one side and 8,000-foot drop on the other. I guess it doesn't really matter which side you fall off of. At that point, I just kept thinking, keep my mind clear. You know, no mistakes. You know, listen to the person in front of you. Make sure you clip into the right rope. Make sure you take a step. Make sure your ice axe bites. You know, I just kept thinking, it all comes down to how you execute every step of the way, you know? I was taking 6 breaths between each step. I mean, every step was really hard. And then at one point, one of my teammates, he put his arms around me. He said, my friends call me Big E. And he said, Big E, he said, we're about to stand on top of the world. And I took a step and, you know, the earth sort of flattened out around me. And I could hear, you know, when you're blind, you listen to space. I mean, space has a different sound to it depending on where you are. And sound vibrations move through space. And you can hear them when you're up high on a summit. Those sound vibrations just move forever. It's infinite. It's a huge, empty, awe-inspiring sound of space. I love that sound.
Eric's historic feat shattered preconceptions of what a blind person can achieve. To him, climbing the tallest mountain on Earth was merely one more way for him to live to the fullest.
I say that you're born in a certain way, and blindness was nothing I could do anything about. I couldn't beat it. So I figure you got to live and use what you have to do the best you can in life. And so I don't really look at blindness as an advantage or a disadvantage. I just say, this is the way it is. This is what I have to work with, and I'm going to make the absolute best of it. And, you know, I just think life's too short to worry about what you can't do and, you know, how tragic it is or how unfair it is. I mean, I just think you think about the things you can do and you think about your impact.
Wow, what a story. We are back. This is Natalie Mullenix with Real Universal Radio, and that was about Eric Longer. What a story. And it's so amazing he did it. And that's what his point is, so good that we can't look, we go and life's too short to not live it. So did you make that list? When we were getting off before, I said, make your wish list about buying a house, and then we're going to go into how to get a home in this market if you're getting beat out. And, of course, everybody knows how to reach us, or you go to realityuniversal.com and fill out the contact us form. People that know us know how to reach us. So if anybody's on here, Ren, you don't know how to reach us, just go to realityuniversal.com, fill out the form, and we'll get in touch with you or call us. All the information's on the site. Okay, so you're getting beat out. You know where you want. You know where you want your dream home or the first home that you want to get, and you made plans. It is a good idea to always make sure that you're going to be able to cover that if you did end up renting it out and moving. So here's what you do. This is really simple. And you're going to be like, you're kidding. That's all I had to do? Yeah, you go and, of course, you tell everybody you know. You go on Facebook Marketplace. And you go on to the neighborhoods, go to Facebook Marketplace, pick the neighborhood in the area you want, and literally put ads on there. Now, real estate agents and brokers, you do this for your clients. If you're buyers, you do it for them. You know, do it for yourself as well. So you go to Facebook Marketplace and also sign up for the local neighborhoods. You know, so say you have Peacock Estates is a neighborhood that you want to buy in. Go and find Peacock Estates on Facebook, put on there and say, I am looking for a property, such and such property can pay up to $350,000 or whatever amount you can pay. Facebook Marketplace, put the ad up there as well, and you're also going to see some other ads of people selling as well. It really, really works. Now, for agents and brokers, you go ahead and you do the farming cards, and you can go to Prospect Plus. There's so many different farming cards you can use. You can pick an address and then send them to 300 people outside of that area or 500 people, and you want to say, I have immediate buyers, can pay up to $400,000 for a single-family, three-bedroom, two-bath home, whatever it is, you want to describe it. Now, many people getting the cards might think, oh, this isn't, you know, true. They just want to solicit me for a listing. It is true, and do it when it's true. Don't make it up. Do it when it's true, and you'll be amazed at, you know, if people are thinking of selling, they're going to call you. Why is this important in the seller's market? It's good to do in any market, but in this market, the buyers are getting beat out. So you as a buyer, people listening as a buyer with your list, go do these. Put ads in. Run ads. Everybody can run ads. You can run it in a local paper, but the Facebook is really good. You can put things on Craigslist. Now, be careful. Because you always, safety is more important than anything at all that we could talk about. So be careful that you're not, you know, coming across somebody that's not legit. If you're an agent or broker, you can look in the public records. Buyers can also get up and Google in searches or let everybody know, and we can all put you in touch with somebody. There's so many ways to get information now and make sure that it's legitimate. But the agents and brokers, you can go up, pull the public records, see what the property's worth. The cool thing about this, okay, so we're going to switch over and everywhere, because you want to find a house before it gets on the market. That is how you stop from getting beat out. You still go in if the house is on the market and you can upbid, and the house has to appraise if you're getting a loan. So as long as the sellers don't come back and say you must pay the difference, if you don't have the difference, you still have a leg up in getting in and get your contract accepted. But if you're not doing an appraisal, or if you have the cash and can pay the difference, you know the max of what you're willing to pay. So those are ways that you go and automatically work and not getting beat out. But the best way is find the properties before they're listed. Get them before they're listed. And so you can even, agents and brokers, you can offer a referral fee to listing agents. If you know there's listing agents that list a lot of properties in a certain area, you can say, hey, you know, if you're really having a tough time with the buyers finding them, you can say, we'll give a referral fee to you. You know, it's so many ways to work this out. Now, listing agents used to always, you know, we would get our own leads and then be able to list the property and sell the property. And now with like the companies like Zillow that take the leads and try to sell them back to whomever's going to pay the highest dollar, that's not always coming back to the listing agent. I totally disagree with all that, but it is what it is. We have to accept what things are. So people that are getting leads on your property, if you're a seller, they're not going to try to sell your property as much as if they don't have it listed. The person that has it listed is going to try more. So the reason I'm mentioning all this is, what do we have to do? You want to find a property that's not on the market. And so for agents and brokers, when you do this and you send out the cards and say, I have immediate buyers, can pay such and such for this home, and you get the calls, it's amazing because you're going to get a listing and a sale. Because of that, okay, you're going to get a listing and a sale. The homeowner isn't going to have to stage their house and go through, you know, the time of prepping it and then having to be uncomfortable with people wanting to show it constantly. I don't care who you are. That is not a fun thing to go through. It's not fun when we have to sell our homes and go through anybody coming in all the time at different hours. And many times people make appointments at the last minute. You wish they wouldn't. It's not always the fault of the agent or broker. It happens. It just happens. People have busy schedules, or they could be, you know, planning on buying this type of home, and then all of a sudden they drive by your home and go, I want that one. What is that? What? How much is that? And it happens to be in their budget. They want to see it right away. I could tell you story after story after story, and it only takes one buyer. So if you're the seller, you want to make sure your home is available constantly to show, which is a pain in the neck. So agents and brokers, when you contact the sellers, and or they, you know, you send out this information, I have an immediate buyer, you should get paid. So you may be thinking, well, I don't have to make that much commission. You should get paid the regular commission and maybe lower it some. I'm not going to go into commission rates on here right now. Maybe lower it some because you didn't have to go market and do all the other things that you would have had to do. And for the seller, they're getting to save some money. They're getting an immediate buyer, and they're not having to go through all of that stuff with showings. Of course, they'd still have to go through inspections and appraisal and anything else that's contingent on the contract. But look how what much of a win-win that is. And for agents and brokers, one other thing, ask the seller if, you know, you make it work. I mean, I used to do this constantly in my young days in real estate, and this is before we had the internet, and even with the internet, it's such a doable thing to do, and everybody's happy. It's a win-win situation. And so then, because you're doing such a great job for the seller, you're doing a great job for your buyer, the client, you know, and we're not going to go into dual agency and on all that right now. I have a pet peeve. Buyers are customers, sellers we're representing if we're doing it that way. If you're already representing your buyer, you can talk to your broker or manager or whomever and see which way to do it. So I'm not going to get into dual agency right now, which I like to, we don't do dual agency, but we still sell our own listings. So in this situation, you have a happy seller, happy buyer. Buyers found the home. It's amazing what happens and how easy this is versus beating everybody out, losing all these offers, making all these offers, and not getting the property. So I told you I was going to tell you towards the end how to do this. So I hope you made your wish list. If you didn't make your wish list and you're a buyer, go back and make your wish list or put it on your to-do list to make your wish list and listen to this again or get in touch with us, and we can put you in touch with a local broker owner. But you want to get this out to as many people as possible because, you know, you'd be amazed when you let people know you're buying a house, too. They, you know, somebody at work may be selling, friends, relatives. I mean, so many things pop up because when you put that intention out, it happens with everything. Just like when you buy a car and then all of a sudden you're seeing the same car everywhere. It's intention. It's part of, I love all this stuff because I've been around it for so many years and I've seen it work and work and work. So having a hard time buying a home in this market, getting beat out, don't be negative. Don't be stressful. Don't, you know, worry about everything. Just make your plan, get your wish list and have tunnel vision, put out the word. And Facebook Marketplace and the local things are so good now. And there's a lot of other social media sites too. You can put it on there. And be careful, you know, if you're, be careful as far as what information you're giving. Always safety is much important, more important than anything else. So what other questions I'm thinking? Would people, the more you can narrow things down, you know, a lot of people are moving to cities right now, and then a lot of people are moving out of cities. It depends on age, work, if you're retired, if you're young. You know, they're seeing, because people can work virtually right now more than they could have before COVID, many are moving out to the countries because they're saying, hey, I really want to be in the country. I'm seeing the young ones many times when I'm moving into the city where things are happening all the time, and it's easy for them to go out with their friends and get together and do things. So there's a big mixture there, but you want to narrow things down, get as much information as you can. And even when you're working with an agent or broker, you want to do your due diligence on the neighborhoods and the areas, schools, anything you can find. But make your list and then go after it. Please don't feel like, I want to buy a house, what's out there, and I have to settle for something if it's not what I want. Make your list, make your wish list. And you were listening to Eric Longer, and he is an excellent example of go for what you want, and don't let this other stuff stop you. And it's exciting. It's very, very exciting. So don't forget about the faith, the diligence, living in the and what it is, because sometimes you can do everything you want to do, everything you're doing, and it just doesn't work out. And maybe it wasn't supposed to work out at that time. I found that happens a lot too. Also, some of the houses will seem like, oh, it's a junk house. We rode by, oh my gosh, it's terrible. Go inside and look. Don't just assume from the outside, because, you know, if you have a wish list and you have 15 items on that wish list and you can get 12 out of the 15 and you're able to change the curbside or change something inside, give it a shot. At least look at it. And that's my two cents for what it's worth today. I have been doing this quite a long time, and I've seen it over and over and over. And so get your list, get your faith up, and if you're a buyer, make it a good time. Oh, the other thing is, a lot of times if the house isn't on the market, you're going to get a better price because the people, depending on the situation. Now, you could be in a situation where somebody says, I'd sell it to you, but I can't move for 3 or 4 or 5 months, or I'd sell it to you, but these are our plans. You can check with the lenders if you have to take a loan and see how that can work, because some of them have stipulations on how long you can they can rent it. Usually it's about 60 days, but I don't want, there's so much more information for every single piece of this, so I don't want to inundate you with it. I just want to leave you with that food for thought. Get out there. You want a house. You're getting bumped out. Take control and put the word out, especially on Facebook Marketplace, especially on the local community sites on Facebook and other social networking sites, and to all the agents and brokers out there, you do the same thing, and you send the farming cards for your clients. And get those listings, do the list and sales, have peace of mind, and everybody's happy. It's wonderful when we can make things a win-win-win. So that wraps it up for today. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.